You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
Hey, welcome everybody. Here District.
I'm Marcus Johnson, my son Chris Johnson. I am the captain of this vessel, El Capitan of Le Vessel. What's up, Chris?
Nothing much, man. Hanging in there. How are you?
Okay, look, so we got somebody on the screen that I'm sure everybody recognized, Lisa Byington, play-by-play announcer for the Milwaukee Bucks.
Marcus, aren't you going to introduce yourself as the only father-son duo to win a national championship?
Yeah, that was coming. That was coming. And then, of course, my son Chris, we're the only father and son duo to win a national championship at the same school. Thank you, Lisa, for reminding me of that.
Hey, you know what? Bruins. It proves I listened to the podcast, baby. That's what that proves.
Funny, Lisa, people have told me, Chris has been one of them, but other people have said, like, you and Lisa have great chemistry this year.
What happened with the first 3 years?
No, it's off the hook. You guys are in the zone. You guys.
Way to go, MJ. Way to go.
Like, you guys have great chemistry. I'm
like high five myself and you.
Listen. It's not that you guys didn't have great chemistry the first 3 years or of your career together, but this year especially just stands out. I mean, you guys are in mid-season form. It is truly an experience that is like joyful, educational. It's fun. I mean, I'm like
really?
Locked in.
I mean, I appreciate that. Because, Chris, I appreciate that because, Marcus, and you can attest to this, when your team is not winning, it is hard to broadcast a game. And, and you and I, like, well, I mean, you did, you know, run up and down the court and in the NBA and, you know, the blood, sweat, and tears of being a player. But I understand that, you know, we're not physically participating, but emotionally and mentally, you know, we're all in. And, it is this stretch is when your team is losing the 4-game losing skid, you know, coming out of Memphis, that is hard to deal with, you know, like the fourth quarter against Memphis. It's like, how do you try to spin this positively for the fans and for us, frankly?
Well, first I want to give Chris props batting fourth at cleanup. Aaron Judge, AKA Chris Johnson. Thanks for cleaning that up, Chris. The chemistry, part that we talked about.
Okay.
But people don't really appreciate Lisa, Chris, and you've been there too. But just when you broadcast games for one team, like with me, I mean, Lisa, you're all over the place. You still doing football? You miss football? Somebody asked you that last.
I said I still do football in September. He said, "Oh, okay." I said, "I just don't do it once the NBA season starts."
Yeah, so you do a lot of different things, but still, you know, the main, well, the play-by-play announcer for the Bucks, and just, you know, when you get close to the guys on the team, not bosom buddy close. We don't hang and all that, but we see each other a lot. We're around each other a lot. We interact with each other a lot. Enough but front office people, coaching staff, all that, it becomes, you know, you get on a different level, and so you become more emotionally invested. And like I told you last night, Lisa, after that loss in Memphis, I was tempted not to eat the post game meal until I went. I was tempted, Chris, until I went back there and saw that good barbecue, fried chicken.
Yeah, that was short-lived.
Chris, you know it's going to be bad when he doesn't get that post-game meal.
Oh, yeah.
But he sucked it up and got it after Memphis.
But Lisa, you know the deal, because after you lose, I mean, the fourth in a row, I mean, you know, it's almost like you don't want to make eye contact with the coaches. And the coaches are cool. They just, you know, they're pros at this. They've been through these stretches. It's more on me how I'm feeling inside.
Sure.
It's like, you know, they don't want to see me. I don't want to see them. It's just like, man. But it's tough, the emotional connection. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't think people understand. And it's early, plenty of time to turn it around. But man, it's just, you know, I sit there after the fourth loss in a row last night, just shell shocked, just like, man, what is going on with this crew? So that's the part, that emotional connection that you're able to establish with these guys.
We're the closest to the team, I would argue outside of like, you know, the coaches and the support staff, because sure. we see every possession, you know, and fans do too, but then we get to see most of the practices. We get to see most of the shoot arounds, you know, we're on the plane, we're on the bus, we're in and around the team during meals. And like you said, you start developing relationships with everyone. And so we are all, you know, heavily emotionally invested into all this. And, you know, you and I could talk about almost every single nook and cranny of this team, right? Because because you see it. So you got to take the good with the bad and just, you know, when I couldn't fall asleep, I kept telling myself like, look, this is a veteran team and you have to have the faith that a lot of the mistakes, MJ, that we're seeing right now and Chris that we're seeing right now, that the good news is that they are correctable, right? A lot of them, the defensive transition and the help the helper defense and some of those breakdowns that we see just defensively. I just feel like that's concentration, that's effort, that's commitment, that's understanding your defensive roles. Those are all correctable. Yeah. And I also told myself, and maybe this is a good and bad thing, but the best, what are the best two games the Bucks played in this year from your opinion?
Philly, Boston, right?
Yeah. That's what I think too. So those are against the two best opponents that we played as well, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so you can look at that. For me, you can look at that as a positive. You know, got a win against Philly, and you played, you know, 2.5 quarters, right? Right? Up against Boston. And so to me, it's like that shows like it's, you got the talent, you got the experience, you got the veteran leadership, you got the talent to compete. Mm. Now you just got to find a way to shore up some of these concentration effort mistakes in my mind.
Lisa, something I was curious about with you guys being so close to the squad, like the temperature in the building, like what's the morale like of the team, the coaches, just from last night, kind of moving forward, if you can share. Just, did you get a sense of how guys are feeling?
Well, I think Brooke, in the post game yesterday, I think Brooke Lopez put it best. And he's like, you know, we already have the answers to the test. we just have to execute it. And, but somehow there's that disconnect, right? Like, you know, the answers, you got to execute. Where's the disconnect in doing the two of them? And I think that's the biggest thing that this team has to figure out.
So a good friend of mine and teammate, former teammate, Cedric Cornbread Maxwell, who does Boston Celtic games. He used to say when we played in LA together, he said, there is the ozone, there's the twilight zone, then there's the Clipper zone. And we were in the Clipper zone, and there's nothing. So we're not quite in the Clipper zone right now.
Yikes.
You don't want to be in that old school Clipper zone. There was no escaping. You're just like Marcel Marceau, you know, you're just stuck. You're just stuck in a box. Oh, I'm in the Clipper zone. No, that third cup of coffee did it, Lisa. So now we keep hearing, or I keep hearing, let me put it in first person here. Don't want to put the sound in your ears, but this whole thing about identity. We right. don't have an identity. We don't have an identity. What's our identity? I think Giannis brought that up.
Right.
And it's
mm-hmm.
interesting, Lisa, because we played a couple of teams so far that when you look at our strength of schedule, first 10 games is what? The fourth toughest. Okay, so fourth toughest. And there were two games on there in Brooklyn and Chicago that you kind of feel like those are really winnable games, just to keep it real.
Sure.
But they had an identity. Chicago, 21 threes against us, 25 threes made against Memphis after being down 20, playing at a fast pace. I think they may have the fastest pace or their highest rate of transition in the league. Just a totally different team. They got at Brooklyn. Jordy Fernandez, you know, they've got an identity. You talked about Dennis Schroeder, you know, and just how well he's playing and that combination of Schroeder and Cam Thomas. And the, you know, they're playing a certain style of basketball. How much stock do you guys, Chris and Lisa first, but how much stock do you put into this whole, you know, this is a team guys have been together for sure. Dame is new, and Torrey and Gary Trent and DeLon and all that. But I don't know. Is it something to that you feel like this team does not have an identity quite yet?
Yeah, I do, actually. I do agree with that. Because here's the deal. Like, you put Giannis and Dame as your top two players on the team, and they each separately have an identity by how they play. Yeah. They each have, and you know, in the Boston game, they each scored 30 points, but they each separately too, in these first few games, have independently scored 30 points. I feel like even in that Boston game when they scored 30, I feel like they went about it in their own independent ways. Mm. And like, they're on the same team, they're on the same court. Mm. They're a part of the same offensive actions, but I still feel like they're doing it independently. And
it's like split screen basketball.
Right. Yeah. No, that's not. And that's a great way.
Two great games, you know, two great players, two great games that we're watching, you know, but we got to remove the split at some point.
Right. Yeah. No, it's a perfect way. Yeah. There's a split right there. And even though it's happening on the same court, it's really not, you know? Yeah. And so I start there. Like, there has to be a blend, a mesh between those two guys first, right? And then it'll be a trickle down effect. And what is after that? What is the team identity? I don't know. I mean, we're not going to be the fastest. We know that. You know, maybe we can be the smartest. Maybe you outthink your opponent, you know, from night to night. And maybe that just looks, being the smartest, maybe that just looks different, right? You know, maybe for a team like Memphis that likes to run and wants to push the pace, maybe at that point, you're deciding two to three players are getting back every single defensive possession, regardless of what happened in that offensive possession, you know? Maybe that varies, but I just go back to the fact that there are players on this team that have won a championship, that understand things. And when you go back, because, you know, Marcus, you and I are flying back from Memphis, and I went back and watched some of the game film, and I know we'll probably get into a couple plays and stuff, but I'm looking at the mistakes, and it's just so, like, basic mistakes, you know, guys not sprinting back, guys not knowing where their man is and sneaking behind them. You know, the help side not dropping down, right? When Brooke has to step up, it's just, you know, fundamental, simple, basic things that I would feel like an intelligent team that's been around for a while, and they very much are sooner rather than later gonna cure those ails. I'm hoping that it's sooner.
No, me too. I think one of the things about the identity, not having an identity comment by Giannis has a little bit to do with the guys, the new guys, kind of figuring out their roles within the current core of the situation. I think that process has taken a lot longer than any of us would have liked. But again, this to me, it's worth going through these October kind of headaches to get to where you want to get to by the time you're in March and April and things like that. So I just feel like the identity part was kind of code word for still trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
The other part too, that you guys mentioned about the split screen of Dame and Giannis, like the synergy there, it can only get better. Like, the connectivity between those two, it can only go up. So that's sort of something that I'm excited about as far as when I'm thinking about being optimistic about where the Bucks can go from here. It's like, this is as bad as it can get. The only way is up from mm-hmm. here.
And, you know, and MJ, you can talk to this too, because we've watched, you know, practices and some shoot-arounds together. You know, let's not negate the fact of the influence of Doc. And I know that Doc has, you know, received some fire by fans and that sort of thing, but he can have real conversations with superstars. And because he has, you know, taken a ride through some of the highest of highs and the lowest of lows in coaching in this league. And without getting into specifics, you know, MJ, you and I have seen him have real talk with the top players on this team, with Chris, with Giannis, with Dame, with Brooke, and
with everyone.
Yeah. And it's encouraging for me to see. It's like a family, right? When you guys, like, you know, you're walking on eggshells because you're not talking about the real problem, right? And I think right now this group collectively with Doc is talking about the real problems. Now, it might not look like it yet on the court,
sure,
but I think that it starts with the communication, which they're having at practices and shoot around. It starts with that communication, and then it starts translating with what you see in games on the court.
Yeah. And so I'm listening to Chris's former teammate, one of our good buddies, Baron Davis and Draymond Green on their podcast. And Baron had some, as he always does, Baron is really astute, really, really insightful when it comes to the game of basketball. He's like the savant, Lisa, that we've been knowing and playing against since he was, how old, 10, 11 years old at the Inglewood YMCA. He was just always this dude that was just so far above and beyond everybody else, even at that age. Just really advanced. But he talked about, Lisa, he first threw out kind of what we needed. We needed something else. We needed, and he threw out the name Ben Simmons. They need Ben Simmons. I'm like, Ben Simmons and Doc Rivers, I don't know if that's a good pick. But you got to just throw that name out there, a player like that, somebody who's not looking to score but facilitates, blah, blah, blah. But it brought me back to something we touched on during the broadcast, Lisa, and Chris Middleton. I think he can be a coalescing, and I had to look that word up. It's like bringing together to form a whole, to coalesce. I get coalesce and coagulate all confused in my mind. But he's more of a coalescer, just bringing things together to make it whole. But Baron talked about Chris, and here's the point. He talked about Chris Middleton and how he was a scorer. And he wasn't so I'm looking up Chris's numbers. His assist percentage the last 5 years, he's always between the 94th and 99th percentile, according to Cleaning the Glass, Ben Falk's excellent site that I subscribe to. Always got to give him a plug. But 94, it's a private joke between me and Lisa Chris. 94th and 99th percentile assist percentage. But even the eye test tells you, you know, he played point guard at Port of God High School in South Carolina. He's a facilitator. He's a ball handler. And the other thing about Chris, so here's what I did. I looked up some numbers. I did some research, did some homework. And so not only that assist percentage the last 5 years has been off the chain, but when you look at the possessions of Chris, Giannis, and Dame last year, it was a lot, like 1,500 possessions. But the differential was plus 16.3. The points per possession, 126.1 in the 90th percentile. Effective field goal percentage, 60.7. The 99th percentile, free throw rate was 85th percentile. Defensively, they're all in the top, you know, in the 90th percentile. You know what I mean? So those are just hard numbers that show when you put Chris along with you. Then I threw Brooke in there, and all the numbers got even better.
Yeah,
I threw Bobby in there as that fourth player, and the offensive numbers exploded off the page. 151 points per 100 possessions. But my point is, Chris Middleton. And look, this is not to put it all on Chris. The onus on Chris, and we need Chris to do it. But I think once he gets back, at least to Chris, I think that's what this team, in terms of that split screen basketball, he may be the guy that can unite kind of the two things that are going on simultaneously and perform it, except with the exception of last night, at a really high level. Is that too much to put on Chris right now? Haven't played a game yet to expect him to be the turnaround, the glue guys we talked about, Elmer.
Yeah, Elmer, which I said, don't call him Elmer, MJ.
Hey, wait, real quick. There was a moment last night where something happened. MJ, I think it was second half. You started apologizing on air. You said, oh, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, like, what happened, MJ?
What the heck was that?
First of all, let me just say I waved off the apology because I was like, at this point, people don't even need to know behind the scenes. But since you brought it up, what happened, MJ?
Well, you know how I articulate with my hand, Chris. I'm going off on something. And I catch Lisa's hair, like, my fingers, and just snatch her head back.
Come on, dude. Oh, my God. Come on, man.
yank a big shock of blood.
I whipped my head around like, what are you doing?
Oh my God. Come on, Em.
I immediately was going to go, I'm so sorry. And she's like,
Chris, he felt so bad. And like you said, you heard, like he started to make an apology on the air.
I could tell. He was like, I'm so sorry, Lisa. I was like, yo, what happened?
I'm just talking away. But anyway, so back to Chris Middleton.
Sorry.
Back to Chris, but great catch. That's a great to see. You're listening. I like that. You're listening to the broadcast. That's great.
So you were the one in the third quarter, late fourth quarter, who was still watching.
Absolutely.
And listening to a game like that.
Absolutely.
We appreciate the viewership, Chris.
Yeah,
You know, Marcus, like, there are so many things that amaze me about Chris Middleton. I mean, first of all, he's just so good at basketball, right? Remember when he came back last year, he was like on a 20 minute restriction. Right. And so for most people, if they have been sitting out and they're on a 20 minute restriction, like they're going to force the issue, you know, they're going to be taking unwarranted shots. They're going to be turning the ball over because they're going to be pressing a little bit. And not 1 second was Chris ever pressing last year when he came back, you know? And so just staying within his own game is something that amazes me. But Chris is like the restaurant menu that you open up and you're like, maybe I'm looking for an appetizer. Oh, wait, there's Chris Middleton. Now, like, what do I need? Like, a good drink. Oh, yeah, I'll take the Chris Middleton. And then, like, the entree. Like, I feel like he checks all the boxes of what you need when you need it. You know, like, to your point, he's going to average 18 to 20 points a game. You know, and you know, it's not easy, but there are a lot of times where he makes it look easy. Like we have MJ's phrase, like step into my office, because he's just going to like school everyone, you know, on his baseline jumpers and turnaround jumpers, but he can facilitate, he can lead, he can be a coach on the floor. What people don't see right now is when he's not playing, he's extremely active in his conversations with Doc Rivers, I've noticed, especially, you know, and in the last few practices, and especially he's vocal on the bench too, you know, and that's the reason why he wanted to go on this latest road trip. And Doc wanted him on the latest road trip because he realizes how valuable, not only just the 18 to 20 points that he's going to get or the assist percentages that you're bringing up, MJ, but just his leadership role. You know, certainly he could be a coach when he's done playing, but just his, you know, we talked about it in the Memphis game, his read react, you know, his basketball IQ is off the charts. And like I said, you need the appetizer, you need the entree, you need the dessert, you know, cause Chris Middleton's gonna fill your plate with all that stuff.
Yeah. And the other thing that Chris does from a basketball perspective, he makes it very difficult to now, you know, send two at Dame or send two at Giannis, because you send two at either one of those guys, now you have a reliable jump shooter that can knock down jumpers. Let me ask a question for you guys. Now, the 1-4 start is obviously where it is, but do you think if the Bucks could have knocked down some open threes over the course of these first five games at a higher rate, and not saying some crazy percentage, but they're at 33% right now. Let's say 38%. Let's say 39%. A couple more open threes. Do you think we'd be having a lot different conversation about where the Bucks are? Because from my vantage watching, just the amount of missed jumpers from the three-point line really stands out. It's like almost like, wait a minute, like this is abnormal. This is the game against Memphis. I mean, they just open shot after open shot. What are your thoughts about that, Lisa?
Yeah, well, I mean, if they just shoot a decent percentage, you know, like in Memphis, they were, 21% by the end of the game. I mean, and they struggled to get above 20%. They were below 20% for most of the game. So if we're talking about just getting to 30% from three, you know, versus like a, you know, respectable, like, you know, high 30s or low 40s. I think it totally makes a difference, not only for the offensive morale and obviously the points scored, but you know, a lot of those misses have resulted in, I feel like, some transition looks, you know, and it's gotten the Bucks out of defensive transition position. So not only it's like a double whammy, you know, you're missing your shot, you're out of position, you know, for defensive transition opportunities. And I would be bold enough to say that if they were shooting, you know, a respectable shooting percentage from three, that they may have picked up maybe, I don't know, one, maybe two more wins here so far in the first five games.
I agree.
Well, and you look at the numbers from the Memphis game, and between Taurean, Dame, Gary Trent Jr., Bobby Portis, and Pat Connaughton, they were a combined 3-4, 24-25. You know, just I'm talking about abysmal.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Anomaly, like bad shooting. You know what I mean? Just open looks. But again, you guys know how the connectivity of the basketball game, when you're playing the game the right way, good things tend to happen for you. Now all of a sudden you're getting defensive stops and you're feeling good about yourself and you're connected. It reminds me of the World Series, Game 5. That's the game the Dodgers clinched, right? I mean, and the announcer, John Smoltz, was really good. He talked about how the Dodgers always execute the fundamentals. They always – that's the thing that has impressed him about this Dodger team with all the MVPs, three MVPs in the lineup between Mookie and Ohtani Freddie Freeman. Three MVPs in the lineup. But he said they had that play where I think it was Mookie hit that grounder to first and the pitcher.
Anthony Rizzo. Yeah.
Yeah, but what's his name from UCLA? Chris Cole, the Yankee pitcher. But he's a UCLA guy.
Yeah, Garrett Cole.
Garrett Cole. I think he's a Bruin. But anyway, but he didn't cover. But just little things. But Mookie, the point was that Mookie sprinted. He ran all out. A lot of guys would assume, okay, it's a routine, you know, first baseman to the pitcher. I'm not, you know, the Yankees were making base running blunders. They were, you know, gas in the out. I mean, just all kinds of mishaps that they were doing. And this is one thing that Doc pointed out about the Celtics in that game a few nights back, was that even when we were making our run and had gotten a small lead, a point or two or whatever, but the Celtics,
they kept running their stuff.
They kept being the Celtics. They kept being who they were, kept executing. And all of a sudden, you know, it's like a game of chicken. Somebody's got to blink at some point. Somebody's got to falter. And if you can't hang with them and execute on that level, you're just not going to hang. And the Bucks, that's where I think Chris Middleton will help. But also that's where the Bucks need to get to, as Brooke Lopez is talking about, Lisa. We're so far away from that right now. The little things, transition. And it was no more emblematic than that play with John Morant on the floor with three Bucks surrounding him. And he's able to ball fake lob. I mean, how do you let a guy, you become a highlight, because instead of just, you know, pouncing on him and making sure he can't get rid of the ball, if nothing else, if you foul, so what? But he makes the you know. So anyway, that's my rant on that.
Yeah, paralysis by analysis, right? And when I see a play like that, where, you know, the athletic instinct would be exactly what you're talking about, MJ, is to swarm that guy. He's already compromised because he's on the floor.
Yeah, you know,
absolutely. He's literally sitting on the floor. So you have the advantage. He doesn't have the advantage. Yeah. But it was almost like, you know, the three guys, like you mentioned, MJ, that's surrounding Ja, are thinking, are you going to do it? Am I going to do it? Do we, you know? And it's just, and that's what I'm talking about, paralysis by analysis. And we see it on both sides here for the Bucks, offensively and defensively. Right. They're sometimes overthinking.
Are either of you surprised that a team with so much veteran experience is still going through things like paralysis by analysis? They seem to be, one thing that stood out is that the Bucks have seemed to be sort of a step slow, a dollar short, and a day late to 50-50 balls, to those key kind of second chance opportunities that may extend the possession out, get some momentum if you knock down a three. It's like we don't get any of those. I equate it to football where, you know, you can't convert a first on any third down. You're like 0 for 12 on third downs. And to me, the Bucks, Lisa, continue to run into sort of this issue of not being able to secure those momentum-changing plays that don't break your back.
Yeah, well, and sometimes being in the league, you know, Marcus, you can speak for this. I said, you know, sometimes when you're a vet, you're more guilty of thinking too much, you know, because you've got like the volume of experiences and the volume of knowledge of the game that, you know, I would think that sometimes you're running into that, you know, more so with quote unquote older teams than some of the younger teams that don't even know any better, right? Like you throw out like an AJ Johnson out there, like he doesn't know what he doesn't know, right? So he's for AJ, he's getting a lot of information thrown at him, but you know, not enough experience right now to just kind of overthink things. Think about a Dame Lillard, a Bobby Portis, a Brooke Lopez, who have been in this league for, you know, years upon years upon years. They're thinking, is this the right move? Do I make this? Is this guy going to do that? I want to step on my teammate's way. You know, like there's a lot going on in those guys' heads. And I think it happens more so with the vets sometimes than you see with some of the rookies who don't know any better.
And also to your point, Chris, and that's why, you know, I think partially kind of a lineup dynamic, these Andre Jackson Jr., I'm going to throw Jackson's name out there. Love what he brings. He was a plus +8 last night, you know, just two field goal attempts, had 4 rebounds, or 5 rebounds, actually, had an assist to Giannis on that pitter. But his youth and energy and athleticism and IQ, you know, so UConn, really smart player. I don't know. It just seems like you have to mix those guys. And then the other point, when Chris does come back, Taurean Prince gets to come off the bench again. So now your bench gets stronger. You know what I mean? Now he's back at his natural habitat, you know, not worrying about playing whatever it was, 27, 28 minutes last night and now having to be a point producer. And, you know, we had to try to find that third guy. So just to answer your question, Chris, about a veteran team. I mean, veteran teams go through this. Good veteran teams will go through this. The great veteran teams are able to work themselves out of it. And that's the thing that we're hoping that this Bucks team is going to be a great veteran team.
And something else that Doc had brought up in the press conference after the Memphis game, he was talking about what Lisa was bringing up about the lapses in the little things, right? Just the details. And he mentioned that there may be some consequences if the Bucks continue to go through these lapses. What is he talking about a lineup change? And if so, how much, like, how important is Ajax and his energy, his youthful legs to match these other youthful legged, high jumping, fast running? Like you see it, like you brought it up in the game. I mean, he's just coming in crashing and it takes out a couple of guys. The energy of the team looks totally different. And then it starts to get contagious. Guys are running faster. Guys are playing harder. I guess, MJ, to you first.
Well, you know, we saw it with Marjan, his rookie year, maybe. It was a game, I believe, and it seems like Sacramento or someplace out west. But just the ability to chase down loose balls, you know, just that quickness, that length. You know, the young legs to be able to outrun people. And that's what we're missing. And that's your point about Doc. We give it a Dane penetrated layup. I think Santi Aldama beat everybody down court for a dunk. You know, and so Doc is just talking about those are the things that they had stressed, just like they stress Peyton Pritchard. You get to his right at the end of a quarter, third quarter. You know, they force in middle, he crosses over, gets to his right, sidestep, you know, another Peyton Pritchard miracle shot. You know, the execution, doing the little things, really, really make a difference. So I think we're seeing more of Andre Jackson Jr. You know, we he played that one garbage time game, Lisa, I forget against whom, but he got in there in 3 straight possessions. He was disruptive. He was all
over the
place.
Nets. It was the Nets at the end. Yeah. Like for me, and probably for you guys playing, one of the biggest teachers for me is to lose playing time. You know, and like you make a mistake, you're out of the game, right? And so we have not yet seen that approach. I don't know if we will. Doc in his post-game, you know, post-Memphis had said the words basically like we have to start holding these guys accountable if they're not executing. And so I don't know what that means. I don't know if he yanks them until someone actually does the job. But you know, I mean, shoot, like – try it maybe, you know, like it's one thing that hasn't happened yet in the first 5 games. So, Yeah, some of those young guys, like the whirling dervish of like of Andre Jackson, you just don't know where he's coming from, right? So at the very least, you're making opponents kind of look to their, you know, over their shoulder, the right and the left, like, where is this guy coming from? What's he about to do? But yeah, I think, and maybe it's just holding guys accountable for like one or two possessions. But if a guy, you know, if you allow someone to lob a pass over your head and get behind the defense, then you're out of the game for the next two possessions. And I don't know if that's what Doc was alluding to, but I know as a player, for me, you know, that spoke volumes, and I learned my lesson really quickly if I got yanked.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, listen, this is a great segment. Lisa, you can stay around for one more segment. I personally, can you hang with us?
As long as you don't pull my hair anymore, Marcus. I'm okay.
Oh, man.
I was like, what is that force? Is that the wind? Is that what is that?
Death grip. All right. We'll be back. More here. District. Lisa Byington. You got the captain. You got the first mate. Coming right back at you right after this.
You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production.
All right. Here, District. The captain, Marcus Johnson, joined by my son, Chris Johnson, and privileged and just having just a great basketball conversation with my broadcasting partner, the great Lisa Byington. And right now we've got a segment called About That Action. I didn't come up with the name, but I like it. It's growing on
Who
me.
Came up with that name?
The great Monus Khan.
Ah,
no
Monus.
No relation to Genghis, I don't think. But
Moni in the middle.
But About That Action. And look, if you want to watch this, then you can tune in to Here District on the Bucks YouTube channel.
Yes.
Is that right, Chris? Okay.
Yeah, right. The official YouTube,
okay.
Baby.
Okay, okay.
We big time. We on YouTube.
You know a lot more about this stuff than I do. But so let's go about that action. And so it's going to be a couple of positive plays. What I like about this first play, watch how many people touch the basketball. First, let's count them. That's one. Giannis and Gary, that's two. Here's a little three, four. All five guys. Now run that back. Run that back, Monus. Run that back. And a couple other things I want to point out. You know, it's important. You guys as ball players know just to be a part of things. But right here on the little pitch back, we're going to freeze it here. Freeze it here. Giannis is denied by Jaren Jackson Jr. He actually directs Taurean Prince to hit Brook Lopez on this, what used to be called a blind pig. I got to do some etymological research and figure out why they call that a blind pig. But that's the old school blind pig.
Yeah.
Brook handoff. But then Giannis, instead of going to the basket, he runs a DHO. Let's be running through Monus with Dane. And then now you got that backside cleared out. There's no help, nobody to tag on that backside. But the main point, guys, is that you had five players touch the basketball. And then we talked about Andre Jackson Jr., doing things to help your team win. Rick Pitino used to say, you're either trying to score or you're trying to help a teammate try and score. I heard him say that at a practice. I was at a Louisville practice years ago. Watch Andre Jackson Jr. Freeze it there. Run it back and freeze it right at the point of contact, Monus. Right at the point of the screen. Now, this is called like flipping the screen and getting credit to Varejao for doing this, but it's just a read on the part of Andre Jackson Jr. It's actually a flat screen that gives Giannis the ability to go either direction. You see the defender, I think Laravia, going to his right, Giannis is left. So Giannis goes the other direction. And this is why he's able to pick up this head of steam as we run it through and throw down this monster jam on Jaren Jackson Jr. because Andre Jackson gave him a hell of a screen. And that's we talk about the little things. The Bucks have got to do a better job at executing the little thing. The screening, I'm not going to call out any names. but you got to give it as well as you receive it. The screening has got to improve because that's a big part of NBA offense, a good heart. Brook Lopez does a great job of it. And you saw Andre Jackson Jr., great job of it. You got to make contact. You got to lay some lumber on some people. You got to hit some people. And that's some of that execution, Chris, Lisa, that we're not seeing the Bucks really do a great job of right now here early on.
So a couple things stand out to me watching those plays. The first play early in the game, and I think I even said to you, Marcus, that the pace of the offense was really good. Like, you watch this and just look at how quickly these dribble handoffs are happening. It's sharp. The cuts are sharp, right?
Yep.
And they know exactly where they want to go. So that action, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, MJ, but the whole entire purpose of that action was to get Giannis and Dame right side. So there's, you're bringing the misdirection, right, for the defense on the left side, but the whole point of it is to bring it back to what it eventually resulted in. And it was a pick and roll situation between Giannis and Dame. And you see this, there's a lot going on, right, with dribble handoffs.
And to your point, but to get the defense shifted and thinking, and now, you know, just a little confusion, you know, misdirection. That's the whole purpose of misdirection, is to evoke confusion for the defense. And that's what makes the really sophisticated offenses hum, is great misdirection. And then you finally get to the basic action. And now you've got, who's the big guy? Edie. Big Edie doesn't know if he's coming or going, doesn't know whether to go left, go right, whether to help, whether to switch. And by the time he realizes it, Giannis is up in the cup for an easy layup. So great
Play. But it's the crispness of the passing. It's the crispness of the cutting. It's the intentionality. We talked about, you know, paralysis by analysis. Those two plays, it was really intentional. They knew exactly where they were going and what they wanted to get done. That second play that we saw, MJ, Chris, like, the thing that stood out to me is the spacing of it. You know, you're Ajax again doing a great job with the screen to free up Giannis, but Giannis isn't freed up if Bobby isn't in the dunker, if Pat and who is that? Is that Wright? DeLon Wright in the far right? Or is that they're spread out in the corners, right? That play doesn't happen if the right spacing doesn't happen. And there were too many times that, and I understand that Doc wants this veteran group to read, react, and sometimes figure things out on their own. And you've talked about Bud running random. So this is not like a new concept, but it's fascinating to me that during those times where it's not this, and they are trying to read, react, there's so many times where guys are cutting and they're bringing their defender into the space, you know, like, and getting it, for instance, in a way of a Giannis drive like that, you know? So those two plays, I think were great to show the positive spirit of what this offense can be in two different ways.
Yeah. You just see more of that.
Chris. And going back to the play, I think something else that was important, if we can just bring it back up, is the Bucks haven't ran that many handoff actions this season. And we're going to see when Dame gets the handoff from Giannis, watch how Dame attacks it off the bounce. And now Edie steps up just ever so slightly, steps up, creates that angle for the pass. That creates an angle for the pass for Dame. And Giannis finishes. And I think that is sort of something that the Bucks should expand upon, because those angles haven't been there that frequently this season. And the handoff is something that's super effective for a team with dangerous weapons like Giannis and Dame.
Yeah, great point. And Doc emphasizes that all the time. Look, guys, when you come off those screens, you got to come looking to score. You got to sell it. You know what I mean? And that's execution. Those are the little things that, you know, that if you don't do consistently enough, you're not going to get that same quality of an open look. So that's good stuff. All right. So that's about that action. Thank you, guys. Great input on those two plays. But now we're going to talk quickly about the rite of passage. And I've been doing a little research on rite of passage. So, Lisa, I'm going to start with you. Was there a person, say when you're around 13, 14, 15, that you could never beat one-on-one? Could be your dad, could be your sister, I don't know. Was there a person that you were able to finally have that breakthrough and beat one-on-one, a one-on-one game of basketball, that made you feel like you were on your way?
Yeah, it was my sister. She's 2 years older than me. Like, always wanted to play her one-on-one in the driveway. In fact, she would always beat me. And I remember one time she beat me and I just started pouting. And so I got grounded by my mom. Like, she was planning on taking us out to, you know, lunch and like shoe shopping and like a fun day. And she was like, Lisa, you're not coming with us. And I was like, why? And she's like, because you need to learn how to lose. I just remember there was a moment, maybe like, you know, right before I got into high school, where my sister and I played, you know, my dad was my high school school coach. So my sister was 2 years older. So I was a freshman when my sister was a junior. We got to play together, you know, for 2 years in high school. But at that point, like I was the starting point guard, you know, I was like the, you know, the plays and the team was kind of running through, even though it was a freshman point guard. Mm. And, yeah, so it was, yeah. But it was that moment where,
right.
Now she'll tell you that she started focusing on softball more than basketball. And that's why that happened.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And that for me, it was my dad. My dad was not, you know, anything of renown as a basketball, didn't play college or whatever, but he was a great playground player and he would beat me, Lisa, Chris, in the backyard to the point where, you know, and it wasn't about him. It just me wanting to beat him so badly, I would just be in tears and just reduced to tears. I'd go inside, my mother would be like, what's wrong with you? What's wrong? It's like, he's like, Jeff, let that boy win. He's like, no, I can let him win. No. But my dad used to do stuff, Lisa, like he would dribble 2-3 dribbles in that fourth pound dribble. He'd catch the ball between his knees and then continue like he had a ball in his hand. And I'd jump for it every time. You know, it's just, he's doing old Harlem Globetrotter tricks, you know, but he was just so good. He'd give me a pump fake and shoot it under my arm. Just all kind of little tricky stuff that used to just, but I finally beat him at about 14, 15 years old, going into my, I think, in junior year, high school. I've got a little growth spurt, athleticism, and I beat him and he never played me again. Which
sounds familiar.
Right,
sounds familiar.
Right.
No, yeah. Man, we play one.
Sounds
of them.
Familiar. Chris, sounds Chris. Familiar, bro.
Uh oh, Chris. Uh oh.
So this guy, we were playing. I've been playing one on one against my dad competitively and seriously since I was about 13. Right. So he won probably 1,000 games in a row. Lisa, literally, did not let me win all throughout high school. It wasn't until like the end of my freshman year in college, where we played actually in Pauley Pavilion. He was our radio announcer. He comes out after a practice. I say, Dad, let's check it up. You know, one-on-one, we'll go to a quick game to like 5. I end up beating him in that game. My first win against him, I was overjoyed, but he never played me again after that. Not in one-on-one. We played basketball together, but you never played me in one-on-one again. That was the last time. So he's like 1,001 against me, and he quit.
You co-sign on that, MJ? You co-sign on that story?
You know, I don't remember. I don't remember it coming up. You know, I don't know. Maybe,
bro,
maybe
please. Not. 100%, bro. 100%.
But so some other stories. So Giannis, I talked to him. He told me Thanasis was his rite of passage guy. And then, you know, Thanasis was a few years older, so Thanasis would just pound him into submission until he was 23 years old. That's the first time he beat him. And just that feeling of exuberance that he finally felt for getting by Thanasis. Talked to Doc. Austin, his son, beat Doc when Austin was a 10th grader. And what is that, Winter Park High School? A 10th grader Florida. In high school. He finally beat Doc. And then Austin actually beat Doc's other son, Jeremiah, who was like a sophomore at Georgetown. Great defensive player in Austin as a 10th grader and beat the older brother, Jeremiah Spencer. I think Doc said beat him. The other son is on the coach's staff, beat Doc when he was, I think he said a sophomore, junior in high school. But Doc was like, wow, I was old by then. Spencer's 3 years younger than Austin. So just Jalen Brunson, I mentioned it to him. He said he's about 14 to 15. Gary Trent Jr., his dad, Gary Trent Sr., the Shaq of the Mac. So Gary Trent Jr. said that he beat dad at 12. But then he threw in this caveat. He said, yeah, but he'll probably tell you something different. I beat him when I was 12, but he'll probably tell you something different. And then Milt Newton, our assistant general manager, he's got a son who's a senior in high school, Miles, athletic player. I asked him about that. He said that Miles beat him, I think, when he was about 15. But Milt said, I've been doing camps all day. And then Miles was like, come on, Dad, 1-on-1.
Excuses.
Yeah, I was tired and all that. So, you know, it's just interesting to me. Kenyon Martin, he's never played his son KJ. The Morris twins have never played each other 1-on-1. I asked them when they were in Kansas who wins or who has won. They're like, we never play because we just get too much into it. So I wonder, I know Brooke and Robin, they've got the two older brothers, Christopher and Alex, and they kind of split up and play with a lot of 2-on-2. So it's just interesting. That rite of passage, you know, that one person that's kind of stands in your way to being fulfilled as a basketball player when you finally have that breakthrough. Like Chris, you never lets me live this down. Lisa, he dunked on me at UCLA in the old in the wooden center, you know. And we were 10th grade or whatever it was, and you know, non-athletic I thought at that time, but
He came from the free throw line. I thought it was going to be an easy block, and he dunked on me with a crowd.
You brought the best out of me, MJ.
What kind of dunk was it, Chris?
A hard, just tomahawk, one hand, like word, yeah. Like just wow, just like, came through.
Yeah, where did that come from? Anyway, thank you guys for humoring me with that segment on the rite of passage. And then finally, Milwaukee may have a WNBA team. You're so into it this year with the WNBA. What's your thoughts on that? And just give us your broad strokes evaluation of what this season was like for you in the WNBA.
Yeah, well, I think it would be awesome. First of all, let's start there. If Milwaukee could get a WNBA team, I think that'd be great. I mean, we know what a great sports town that Milwaukee is. Wisconsin sports fans are in supporting, Bucks, Brewers, Packers, Badgers, Golden Eagles, right? Like they're all in. And I just think it'd be great. I was listening to another podcast that you did, Marcus, and you were saying that you visited you went to a couple of the early pro games in Milwaukee?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A couple of Doe games. Milwaukee Does. Way back.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, it's what the league needs. We're already seeing some expansion teams, happening in Canada and now, Golden State and, the Valkyries team that's going to start out. And this is the important thing, is that there are so many great women's college basketball players. Like, it is hard to make a WNBA roster because each roster, I mean, right now without the expansion teams, there were 12 teams in the league and only 11 to 12, depending on what your salary cap was, there was only 11 to 12 on each roster. So you do the math on how many people are actually playing in the WNBA. Like, there are so many in the last few years, first round picks from women's college basketball that are, the stars and all Americans that don't make WNBA rosters, because there's just no space. Cause right now, you're going to have a 3-year vet or a 4-year vet on your team before you're going to have a rookie who doesn't know what she's doing. So it's broke my heart to see some really good college basketball players not even make the roster. So that first and foremost, that's one thing that is going to happen with the expansion of some of these teams and these basketball passionate cities that we see like Milwaukee. But Marcus, it was awesome to cover the league. I do a lot of local games for the Chicago Sky. I did some national games for CBS and covering the league. And, of course, Fever games, Caitlin Clark games are sold out, not only in Indianapolis, but wherever the Fever go. But there were other places that were sold out. There were other places that had the fervor. Like, I got to cover Angel Reese in Chicago, and her jersey went like that when it was available. I talk about the crossover of and just even being, and I hate saying this, but being, because it's the reality, I'm being a female broadcaster, is when we have not only women, like listening and not thinking twice about, hey, that's a female broadcaster, but we have men listening to that as well. It crosses over in supporting women's sports. So if you're supporting Caitlin Clark or an Angel Reese because she's a basketball player, that's when we've made progress. Not that she's a female basketball player, but she's a basketball player. And when I was traveling across the league and covering it this summer, it was important for me to see men wearing Angel Reese jerseys and Caitlin Clark jerseys and Asia Wilson jerseys and Brianna Stewart jerseys, because then Spike Lee at the WNBA finals, it's in his city, like he's got to be there, right? Like, it's that crossover where I start to realize, okay, now we're really making the progress and not being like, This is a gender thing. This is a women's basketball player and a men's basketball player. It's just a basketball player, and we love the sport, so let's support it.
Lisa, Angel Reese has turned out to be like one of the most marketable superstars across the board in any sport. Where does she rank amongst the tier of athletes that you have covered during your career? Like, where is Angel standing in that?
Well, that, I think that's to be determined. She'll be the first to tell you that she's still learning, right? And but I will say this, like, her perseverance is one of the greatest that I've seen in an athlete. Her offensive rebounding this year was elite. She was the best offensive rebounder in the league as a rookie, right? And she set all kinds of rebounding records. the three of us know as playing this game, rebounding, a lot of it is, you know, understanding timing and stuff, but a lot is just effort, right? So to me, like, she is one of the tops of the tops in terms of just effort and persistence and trying to make that pay off in, you know, game after game, possession after possession. But the impact that she can have, and this is what I appreciate in covering her, is that she is definitely her own person, you know, and that is not always easy to be with the social media attention, the criticism, like never read the comments. That's what I've learned. Like never go down and read the comments. But she is unfazed by that. You know, and it's a reason why she has a podcast called Unapologetically Angel, because that's exactly, I think that's the best way to describe her. That's exactly who she is. And, she wants to get better. You know, like you ask where she's at. She's not there yet. You know, she's not there with the greats yet. She'll be the first to tell you that. But she can get there. And I'll tell you what, after every game where she took on an Asia Wilson or Brianna Stewart or a Tina Charles, like some of the great post players in the league, what did you see Angel doing? You saw Angel grabbing them, pulling them aside after the handshake, after the game was ended, and they were talking for 5 minutes. Like, she's just soaking it in. She wants to learn from the greats in her position. And because of that, she is going to be great in this league. And this league is great right now because folks like Angel Reese are in it right now.
Yeah. And I'm waiting for the day when like a guy like myself will be asked to do some, you know, color commentary for the WNBA, you know, to get that crossover working. Because I'd love to. I got a daughter, Shiloh, you know, I post video for all the time. Chris works her out. And so the game is in good hands. There's some young ladies right now, Lisa, in L.A. alone, Amel Cook and Tatiana Griffin and Special K and Sydney Douglas. I mean, there's some ladies out there that, man. The last question, can you point to a player or a period of time when the game just went to another level in terms of skill-wise and it's not a knock, but it's just the skills of these young ladies just evolved in a spectacular manner over I don't know how many years. But was there a player that kind of helped lead to that? Somebody that you love watching play that had all the Anita Ortega was a lady who played at UCLA back in the 70s when I was there. Yeah. Watch her moves. I'd take some of her little hesitation stuff she was doing. was there a period or a player that you think should get some mention when you talk about the evolution of the game in terms of skills with these ladies?
Man, I mean, you get in trouble if you start naming names, yeah. Right? But
don't forget nobody.
No, I mean, yeah. Well, you throw out Cheryl Swoop's name. I mean, what she did in that like national championship game with Texas Tech, like it was like, whoa, who's that? Lisa Leslie comes to mind. Candace Parker, I think, for me. Like, yeah, Candace Parker was back. Like, what are you doing? You know, like she, it was like she could hit every shot. She could shoot every shot with both hands, you know. She could play, like, I felt like she could play 1 through 5 sometimes. And for me, that kind of transcended things. Until some of maybe these youngsters get more years behind them, I still think Diana Taurasi is the greatest, in my opinion, the greatest women's player. And I was not a jerk when I played, so I'm not sure why I like, but I, like, not saying that Diana's a jerk, but she plays with a chip on her shoulder. Right, and I love actually watching players that play with a chip on their shoulder. And DT is certainly that. So, amongst others, right? So I have to say that so I don't, if I forget anyone, like, don't get in trouble. But those are some of the ones that stand out to me. That really have gotten it done.
Well, an impressive list, and man, it's just been fun to watch. It's just been, I mean, you know, just, it's must-see TV. You see a good WNBA game, any WNBA game coming on, and you know, just being able to watch it and lock in and enjoy it, man. It's been a real thrill. But it's been a real thrill to have you come by here, District, today. Thank you on your off day to spend a little time with myself and Chris here. And keep your hair out of my fingertips, please.
Come on, MJ.
Keep your hair away from my fingers.
Do better.
The hazards of broadcasting. You know, fans just don't even realize.
I like to be animated when I talk. All right, Lisa, have a great day. I'll see you soon. And thanks for coming by to hear this.
It was appreciate a good it. Kind of therapy session for me, so I appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Lisa.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.